welcome to the final episode of Feather and Flock, all about eagles. My name is Anya Murray, and as an ecologist and a writer, I'm intrigued by how wild creatures have come to be as they are, how they live and interact with their environment, and our ever-evolving relationship with other non-human beings. In making this series, it's been a privilege to meet and interview some of the people at the forefront of nature conservation across Ireland and listen as they share some incredible insights and experiences with us. In this episode, we've been exploring the most majestic apex predators of the bird world, eagles.
I'm Brian McGlynn. I'm a musician, singer and songwriter, mostly with my band Ye Vagabonds. I've always been fascinated by the stories and folklore associated with wild birds here in Ireland. All the ways that birds and people's lives have intertwined, and the extent to which birds have influenced traditional music. Through conversations with poets, folklorists, musicians, writers, and musicologists, it's become clear that people have always had a great depth of understanding of all the birds that we share a home with, along with all of their individual quirks and behaviours. Eagles are a perfect example of how certain birds' folk narratives can change over time, and how these associations can reflect our changing cultural attitudes to nature. Inspired by the discoveries that Anya and I have made as we collected material for these programmes, I have curated and performed new and old music for each episode with a host of musical collaborators, including songs written especially for the series.
For thousands of years, both golden eagles and white-tailed sea eagles were widespread across Ireland. People in the Mesolithic period, generally referred to as hunter-gatherers, held birds of prey such as owls, falcons and eagles in high esteem. There's evidence to suggest that these people ate eagles, even though they would have been difficult to catch and unpleasant tasting. The likely explanation is that, in an animistic worldview, consuming the flesh of such powerful animals would help convey their characteristics to those who ate them. The eyesight of the owl, for example, the speed of the falcon, and the hunting prowess of the eagle. Throughout our history, people respected and even revered eagles as a symbol of great wisdom and power. Having seen them in person, this makes perfect sense.
The Irish word for eagle is uller, often anglicised in place names as owler, uller, or iller. Based on a study of place names containing the word uller, it's been estimated that the population of golden eagles in Ireland in pre-medieval times was well over 500 pairs, and white-tailed sea eagles were even more abundant. But attitudes to the wild changed dramatically since early medieval times. With colonialism came the impetus to tame and control wild nature, to subdue both landscape and people in order to make way for colonial landlords and their new approaches to profiting from the land. Eradicating large and powerful predators such as wolves and eagles was a major part of this endeavour. If these symbolic wild warriors could be eliminated from the landscape, so too the rebellious nature of the people here. By the 18th and 19th centuries, eagles were perceived as an unwelcome enemy. The advent of the breech-loading shotgun then made their eradication possible.
In a concerted effort to exterminate them, wild eagles were shot and poisoned across the country. Their nests, too, were pillaged and destroyed. Records suggest that the last pairs survived up until about 1910, In remote places such as West Kerry, North West Mayo, and Glenveagh in Donegal. So for over 100 years, there were no wild eagles in Ireland, until the turn of this century, when a reintroduction programme began, run by the National Parks and Wildlife Service in collaboration with the Golden Eagle Trust. Now, eagles are back, flying high over Irish mountains, valleys and coastlines. Each summer, a dozen or so eagle chicks were collected from the wild in Norway, with the assistance of the Norwegian conservation authorities, and brought to Killarney National Park. Once transported and minded carefully for a few weeks as they acclimatised to the new setting, the chicks were released. Within weeks, these fledgling eagles went exploring, the first white-tailed eagles to fly through Irish skies in almost 100 years. Brian and I travelled down to Glengariff in West Cork to see where the first Irish-born white-tailed sea eagle in over 100 years had fledged from. High up in a tall tree at the edge of Garanish Island, overlooking Bantry Bay, is an enormous eagle's nest. There also happens to be an old Martello tower nearby, so with a pair of binoculars, it's possible to look out through the treetops and peer right over to the nest, a rare and privileged view into the lives of this pair of white-tailed eagles and this year's chick. We met with Claire Herdman, conservation ranger with the National Parks and Wildlife Service, who's been keeping a close eye on this particular family of eagles since they settled on the Beara Peninsula.
So the white-tailed eagle, yeah, it's our largest bird of prey. They have a wingspan of, kind of on average, about 2.2 metres, but the female can have a wingspan up to 2.45 metres, so that's like 8 foot, so they're huge. I mean, one of the nicknames is the flying barn door, so, yeah, they're really massive.
Oh, wow, look, oh my gosh.
See that flying across there?
Oh my goodness, so he's kind of brown on top and you can see the white tail.
Yeah, so you can see the white tail. And you can see, actually, I can see because I'm looking through the binoculars, it has an orange tag, so I know that one is the male. He was satellite tagged, so we know where he travelled, where he was until he set up home here. But yeah, that's the male. So we're hoping he's out hunting for fish. And you can see he's heading out into Bantry Bay there.
Do they feed exclusively on fish?
They don't feed exclusively on fish, but it's definitely one of their favourite foods here. Actually, surprisingly, dogfish, so they're probably also getting discards from possibly fishing boats. So we had some quite interesting scenes where the dogfish brought it because they've got such tough skin, still alive in the nest.
You're kidding me.
I tried the male sitting there, what's going on? This thing is alive, and getting a bit freaked out. But so fish, yeah, is a big part of the diet. But they will also take seabirds. So again, we've seen this nest site that we've had things like cormorants and shags and other seabirds like auks being brought in. So they are opportunists. But we know this pair, you know, what we call a fully maritime pair, they're nesting on an island. They've got the sea all around them, where some of our pairs are nesting kind of on lakes, a little bit more inland.
Oh yeah, I can see the tail and the 12.
Giving us great show.
God, he really is. He's posing there now for us at this stage.
So all the birds that came in from Norway all have a white tag on one of the wings, and then for each year there's a different colour on the other wing. So the female here has a black tag on one wing. So we know she's a bird from 2011 that was brought in from Norway as a chick as part of the reintroduction programme.
So she would have been born in Norway and brought in and released in Killarney National Park, and here she is 10 years later. Breeding on Garanish Island.
Yeah, and the male, he's really interesting because he's actually a wild-bred bird. She originally had a different mate, a male, who disappeared. So this is a young bird from 2018 who hatched from a nest in County Kerry. So he was actually the first Irish-bred male to fledge his own young. So last year was his first successful attempt at breeding. So, they had a chick last year, a male, who's... Yeah, I think he's off in County Kerry at the moment. There's always this story, oh, they pair for life. And, you know, we have had a couple of losses here over the years, like of birds that disappeared, and we don't know what happened to them. But one year, when this female first arrived, she actually had a nest about 5 kilometres away, way down the valley up there behind us. She had a nest there, and the original female was in a nest here. and I was trying to work out who the male was for this, who her partner was, and I was there one day, and it was the same. The male had two nests.
He had two females in two separate nests nearby.
And both of them had laid eggs, and he's there going between the two. But unfortunately, once the far nest hatched, he kind of, I suppose, the instinct when actually with a live chick was there, he abandoned this nest and left. And then the subsequent year, the female that's here, she kicked the original female out. She's a really big female. The original female was quite small. And she basically ousted that female.
And stayed in the nest with the partner of the original female.
Yeah, so she switched from the far nest with back here with him.
So you could make a soap opera over the love lives of these white-tailed eagles.
Yeah, and unless they were had these wing tags on or the satellite ties, we wouldn't know because they all kind of more or less look the same. Although they do have really different characters. Like, she's quite assertive. She definitely... I didn't say the female's actually quite a bit bigger than the males. So, like, an adult female could be around about 6 kilograms, whereas an adult male might be 4 kilograms. So when you see them perched together, the female is really distinctively bigger.
And when the chicks fledge, are they, I know they're fed for a while, but are they then booted out of the territory of the parents?
Yeah, we're not quite sure exactly how that process happens. Yeah, I think they just get that urge to travel. And you see them sometimes, they kind of take a day trip off and then come back, and then maybe a couple of days and then come back. But you see the parents starting to kind of lose patience with them because the chicks can get quite aggressive. Like when the adults have got food, they'll be like trying to get it off the parents. So I think after a while, the parents have just had enough.
Because they had a webcam streaming the goings-on in the nest, Claire was even able to tell us about some of the quite particular behaviour of a chick behaving badly.
So there was definitely quite a lot of politics, like the male and the adults were trying to sort of build the nest up a bit, and the chick would come in and literally like having tantrums, like pulling sticks out of the nest again, because we still had the camera on the nest. It was really funny, yeah, just kind of see it. And it took a while, because for a while the female... I suppose she was still trying to protect the chicks, so at times she was like booting the male out. And then we knew the final sort of turning point was when the two adults teamed up and booted the chick out. And we thought, yeah, finally they've kind of decided which way this is going to go. You know, we could see there the male flying out had like an orange tag on one wing, green on the other. So that means we can identify the birds visually, like with the binoculars, but also a lot of them have a satellite tag fitted. So the young that have hatched in this nest over the years have all had satellite tags fitted so we can follow their movements.
I've looked up some of the maps of where they go, and they disperse right up to kind of Mayo and Donegal, and then they come back again, don't they?
Even further, like we've had ones go as far as Scotland, across to England, to the Isle of Man, come back. Some of them really make quite long journeys. Others are home birds, so we've had some that never leave Cork and Kerry. You know, they might fledge from a Cork and Kerry nest and they just don't want to go anywhere.
And of the 12 breeding pairs that we have at the moment, where are they in Ireland?
Well, they are starting to spread. So we're down in County Cork. We've got pairs in Kerry, Clare, Tipperary, Galway, and now in Donegal for the first time. So they are gradually spreading.
And they're all coastal except for the ones on Lough Derg and Mount Shannon?
Yeah, yeah. There's two pairs on Lough Derg. Yeah, so they're all the rest... more or less coastal, yeah.
Are there any specific benefits to the ecosystem due to reintroducing these eagles?
Well, they're apex predators, and what's interesting about that is because Ireland has had a paucity of birds of prey, they think things like hooded crows and ravens and even possibly magpies have sort of taken the niche of those. So by having apex predators, you kind of put things more in balance, and there's some kind of research that shows where you do have eagles, you can get a reduction in those corvids, which are actually possibly more likely to attack a newborn lamb. I remember one time I was watching an eagle up a mountain and it landed on a rock quite close to a sheep. The sheep just turned around and chased it off. So, you know, a healthy...
Really?
Yeah, a healthy ewe will see off an eagle. Have you heard of kleptoparasitism? It's where one animal steals the food off another animal. So you'll see it sometimes, the white-tailed eagles will do it with otters. So you have an otter that catches a fish, and then the white-tailed eagle will come down, scare off the otter and take the fish that the otter has caught. But grey crows can do it with eagles. So the eagle might be feeding on something on the ground. So the grey crow, one of them is behind pecking its tail, distracting it, and then the other one nips round and gets like a bite of the food. So there's all sorts of interesting strategies in the wildlife world in times of getting your dinner.
And what is the attitude in Glengariff? Because obviously these birds are only here for, what, 10 years. Are people delighted that they're here? Are some people resentful of their presence?
I mean, generally people seem to be really happy with them here. I think there's always that kind of fear of something new. So I think when the eagles were very first brought into Ireland that first year in 2007, there was a bit of kind of opposition, you know, farmers that were worried they might take their lambs and things. But what we found here on the Bearer Peninsula, you know, since the eagles have settled and established territories, people have realised that, you know, that they're not taking all their lambs, you know. So I think once people have got used to them, and there's a lovely kind of sense of pride that they've chosen to nest here. And yeah, people get used to seeing me around. And so if I'm watching a nest, you know, I might be with the telescope set up like this. And, you know, if it's a landowner or a farmer going by, they'll be, oh, how are the eagles doing? Any chicks this year? You know, so I think people, yeah, genuinely interested and, yeah, realise that they haven't posed a threat to their livestock.
It's heartening to hear about the eagles and how well they're settling in since the start of the reintroduction programme, and that people are so excited about their return too. But there are challenges. Occasionally, young birds collide with wind turbines and are killed that way. And others are poisoned, perhaps intentionally, perhaps accidentally.
Over the last few months, we've had two definitely poisoned. We had two others picked up in Northern Ireland just, again, about 10 days ago, suspected poisoning, but we don't know yet. What happens if we do pick up a dead bird? It gets x-rayed, then it goes to post-mortem, then toxicology, so we get all the information in to find out the cause of death.
How does the poisoning happen? Is that accidental or intentional, do you know?
We don't know. I mean, we think for the most part it's probably not intentional, not targeted at the eagles. It's possibly targeted at something else, like possibly foxes. But, you know, it's illegal to lay out poison meat bait, whatever it is. And one of the poisons being used is actually completely illegal as well. Carbapenem is completely legal. It's been legal since 2009. But the problem is if you put out poison, it's indiscriminate. So it can poison anything. It can poison your dog, can poison a bird of prey. It could poison, say, a fox, and then a bird of prey feeds on the fox, so you can just get this sort of chain of poisoning. Yeah, so that's really sad to see some poisoning still happening. And it's absolute tiny minority, but of course, eagles are flying up high and covering long distances, so it only takes one or two people to be laying poison bait, and it can have really drastic consequences.
Before we had to run off to catch the boat back to the mainland, we took one last close look at the eagles through Claire's telescope.
So you can see he's got a really pale head.
Yeah.
And actually also his beak is yellow. So the chicks would be darker brown and their bill would also be dark. So you can see the really pale head on that male.
Oh, look, he's calling out.
That sound is really distinctive. And when they're courting, they'll do like a duet. So the male and female will sit together on a branch and just do, like we saw there, you know, they put the head up, open the beak and they do that very distinctive call. So it's lovely to see when they're courting.
Strong beak, though, the size of it. It's so chunky and yellow and the downward hook of it.
And the talons, we can't see the talons on that bird, but they're absolutely massive.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for taking us out.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, we better lag it for the boat.
Watching these birds fly around Bantry Bay, I was left wondering whether the landscape might hold on to any memory of them, in a country where the hills and crags still bear their name. Or perhaps the eagles can sense where they once hunted and nested. And from their higher perspective, I wondered how the land might have changed. I wondered how it might change in another 100 years too. With all of this in mind, I wrote and recorded this next song with my friend and bandmate Alan McFadden. This is called Up From Where You Are. Cascade silhouette, quick past the window. First light, yellow air, blue ice in the shadows. Steps crack the clear bog, rusty cans clatter. Harsh cry, a hazy sky, the hares dash for cover. Remembering the way now. Remembering the way now. Up from where you are, can you see where we're going? Following the winter sun over the horizon.
It's early days yet for golden eagles and white-tailed sea eagles in Ireland. They're managing to find their way in the landscape, and each year new nesting territories are being established. But there are still many challenges. Persecution remains a threat, as eagles, along with other birds of prey, are regularly killed by illegally laid poisons. Barn owls, hen harriers and even kestrels are not doing well in Ireland, each of these being red-listed as species of conservation concern here. As well as cases of illegal persecution, most raptors struggle with a dearth of healthy habitats, especially in Ireland's mountainous areas. Uplands are grazed bare by a combination of sheep and invasive deer, chomping away at the layers of plant life that are necessary to sustain a diversity and abundance of invertebrates, upon which healthy populations of small birds and mammals depend. And these, in turn, are what support top predators such as eagles, harriers, and kestrels. These birds are hardy, but they aren't ever going to be able to thrive without enough food. Ireland's native birds of prey are so much a part of our heritage and are key indicators of the health of our ecosystems. That so many are still struggling tells us that we have much to do to restore healthy habitats across the landscape. But witnessing the first generation of Irish-born eagles in over 100 years has been, for me, one of the most moving wildlife encounters I've ever had. And I can't help but feel hopeful after experiencing the thrill of seeing enormous eagles soaring high over Bantry Bay and the mountains of Glenveagh. As well as being crucial for restoring the ecological balance in many Irish ecosystems, there's a hugely symbolic merit to these reintroductions. We are gradually shifting our perspective. Wild no longer has such negative connotations, and so we are welcoming back wild creatures and recognising the need for more concerted action for wild nature. A few years ago, one freshly fledged female white-tailed eagle flew from Cork all the way to the site where the last breeding pair lived in County Mayo in 1909, as though paying homage to the last of her kind here. These pioneering eagles carry the hopes for the future of so many of their wild kin across Ireland.
For years now, I've found it difficult to explore nature in Ireland without being focused on the damaged landscape all around me. But just this morning, as I walked along a track in the Wicklow uplands, I noticed a change in my perspective. My eyes were raised to the sky in search of a great soaring shadow above the mountain ridge. I'm no longer doubtful of the future vitality of nature. I'm actually deeply hopeful, watching for the return of the eagle, that ecological recovery isn't just a possibility, but is an inevitable future for us.